Welcome. You're listening to With a Splash of Jesus, where your host, Jordan, explores real and sometimes difficult conversations that will empower you to create a safe space for not only yourself, but for those around you. Here's this week's episode of With a Splash of Jesus. We hope that you enjoy.
All right, friends. Welcome back to With a Splash of Jesus. I'm here with Elle Edwards. This is our second guest now that we've kind of done on a, I like to call it a podcast, speed dating thing. And so, guys, I'm really excited for you to hear her story and just everything that the Lord has taught her. So let's get started. What are you currently reading in the Bible?
Literally just reading. I was looking up Ephesians 2:10 because I wanted to quote it in a blog post I was writing because I love it. It gets me excited. But most recently, I'm busy exploring Nehemiah for a series that I'm sharing in my local church. And we just did chapter 3, which is the chapter with so-and-so built this thing and added the bolts on the bar and so-and-so built this thing. And you will probably never, ever, I said to them on Sunday, you will probably never, ever hear somebody preach on Nehemiah chapter 3 ever again. And I'm not sure that I want to preach on Nehemiah chapter 3 ever again, but God did his thing and it was still really good. So I'm currently going through it and enjoying it for many reasons.
So what is the Lord currently teaching you in that?
The reason I got nudged into looking at it was because I had this picture, and I don't know enough about the US church. As your listeners will have gathered, I'm not from the US. I'm from the UK. And here in the UK, the church is a little bit, if you believe the media, is a little bit, feels like it's lying in ruins, a bit like the walls of Jerusalem in Nehemiah's time. And so I dug into it because it was a picture of, okay, Nehemiah built the walls. How do we rebuild what Jesus is doing in our nation? And I suspect it could extrapolate out to other Western nations as well. You know, his stickability, the fact that he didn't sort of crumble when people had a go at him, and he was following what God wanted them to do. So we're only on chapter 3 so far. I mean, I've read Nehemiah before, but not recently. So I can only tell you up to chapter 3, but so far it's been that reminder of, you know, he had a passion for what God was doing, and if God's told you to do something, then go and do it, you know, and don't worry about the naysayers.
I love that. So what is currently on your nightstand?
Well, I have a Kindle mostly, most of my books.
I'm a huge Kindle fan. And I, every time someone says that, I'm like, yes.
Well, it's just, for me, it's that like immediacy. If someone recommends a book to me, and like, if I can read it, like, I'm like, yes. What I tend to do actually, I will answer your question in a second, sorry. Because I tend to have several books on the go at a time. What I'll tend to do is I'll download a sample if someone recommends a book, because then it reminds me, oh yeah, I want to go back and read it. But to your question, there's actually 3 books I've got on the go at the moment. I've got one on my Kindle. I forget the full name. I think it's Carriers of Fire by a lady called Karen Lowe. She's actually from Llanelli, the town where I live. And it's all about the Welsh revival of 1904, 1905. And the women from the revival and the stories of the women and young people. And they're kind of the untold story. So I've got that one. I've also got a book, which I've completely forgotten the name of. It's to do with love. It's a book my dad gave me. A Theory of Love, I think it's called. I've tried starting that several times and fallen asleep several times. I'm going to have to read it downstairs because it's one of those books, if I read it when I'm in bed, I will fall asleep. Sorry, Dad, if you listen to this. He told me it's really good, though, so I'm going to persist with it. And then the last one I've got at the moment is called The Oxygen Advantage, which is all about nose breathing. So, as you do. But 3 is quite good for me. I usually have about 4 or 5 on the go at one time. It's depending on what I'm fancying.
I'm the same way. And we've talked about this on a couple episodes, actually. So just a tip, if you need it, I love a Goodreads account is what it's called. So yeah. So anytime someone recommends it, I mark it in my want to read, and it hooks up with your Kindle. So it keeps track of like how many books you've read and stuff.
Yeah,
so I like that. I'm a goal oriented person. So like, yeah. Oh, I've read 23 books this year, or like whatever. I'm like, yeah. Check. So what is something you are so passionate about you can't stop talking about it?
We were chatting about this beforehand, and the answer I usually give is Yuya, which we'll get into afterwards. So I did promise I'd tell you the thing I'm getting geeky about at the moment, and it is the whole nose breathing thing, because I started Couch to 5K. I don't know, is Couch to 5K popular in the US? Yes, good. Okay. I did it a decade or so ago. Your listeners can't see me. I'm quite curvy, so I'm not your traditional looking runner. Do you have a thing called Park Run in the US? So every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. in various running locations, your face is telling me no, but it might be in the US, doesn't matter. My daughter did Couch to 5K first, and she said, oh, I'm going to go to Park Run. I'm like, okay. So I started going to Park Run back in wherever, earlier in the year, and it kind of they got me. And as a result of that, they didn't mean to, but I got the bug and I started doing Couch to 5K. And then I started reading this book about, because I found myself getting quite out of breath, as you'd expect when you run. I thought, I feel like I should be more efficient in this. And I don't remember how I got into the whole nose breathing thing, but apparently it's like really important. And I say that to some people who are like, yeah, of course, duh. Did you not know that? I'm like, no. So I've started reading this and I've had to pause it and be careful how much I read it right now, because I know as I'm running now, my running technique with my breathing is like so wrong. But I don't want to stop because I'm on week 7 of 9. So I want to get to the end of week 9, do my final run officially, and then go back and apply it. But I would encourage people, if you're, because I hadn't paid attention to how much even things like orthodontic stuff with kids and like jaw formation can be linked to mouth breathing rather than nose breathing. It's fascinating. So I'm quite geeky about that at the moment.
I'm going to have to look into that. I'm a crunchy mama. So actually, I consider myself a scrunchy mama.
Okay. I don't know what that is.
Okay. So I'm a semi-crunchy mama.
I don't know what crunchy mama is either.
Okay. So crunchy is like, you're very like holistic.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. So like we do like essential oils over medicine, like that kind of thing. Nice. So I'm going to look into that. So tell us a little bit about your journey and just how you got to where you are today. Just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, that's a really big question. I'll give you the short version. Okay, I've always been a little bit weird. And I used to embrace the fact that I was a little bit weird. I remember like one day and somebody saying to me, you're really weird. I'm like, thank you very much. I took it as a great big compliment when I was in my sort of like pre-teen age. And somewhere between becoming a teenager and an adult, I kind of believe the lie that, you know, you shouldn't be weird, that you should just sort of be normal. And so I wasn't very ambitious when I was sort of younger. All I really wanted to do was fall in love, get married and have kids. And so I did fall in love and get married and have kids. And as I raised my children, I was trying to play this sort of like normal, good wife and mum sort of role. And as a result, if I'd have gone to my local family doctor, as you call them, GP, we call them here, I would probably would have been diagnosed with anxiety or depression. I was like, although I live in the same house, have the same kids, same husband, like the difference between me now and then is like night and day. I remember being really like frustrated and angry and just really not very happy at all. Bearing in mind, I loved Jesus. Like I prayed the prayer when I was 12, but I was trying to sort of fit into this role of what who I should be. And the turning point for me was a Bible weight loss course, which, you know, God meeting us where we're at. I've already mentioned the fact I'm quite curvy. But the premise of this Bible weight loss course for the purposes of weight loss was, if you're, God's interested in everything, he loves you. He is interested in everything, including what you put in your mouth. So if you're tempted to eat like a Mars bar, you have Mars bars in the US? Chocolate bar.
Okay, yes, chocolate, we have chocolate bars. Yeah.
Okay, there you are, New York. Yay. So if you're tempted to eat a chocolate bar, and my brain is currently going, you don't have Mars bars. Whoa, that's a whole other thing. Do you have Bounties? No, we won't go down that route. Name that chocolate bar. That could be a whole other game, a whole other podcast.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you're tempted to eat a chocolate bar when you're not hungry, talk to God about it and he can help you. Well, this was a revelation to me. I will tell you, I was like, really? Like, I knew that God loved me like academically, but I guess you could say I was scared out of hell when I was 12 or 13. I hadn't yet been loved into heaven. And so that for me was the start of this journey. Well, actually, if God loves me just the way I am, because that was what they were saying, you know, God loves you just the way you are. You can talk to him about everything. Well, if God loves me just the way I am, maybe it's okay for me to be me. And that was the start of me sort of like embracing the fact that I'm a little bit quirky, a little bit ADHD inclined. My brain, as we've already demonstrated, goes off in many very random different directions and can't always be guaranteed to be sort of gathered back in, but that's okay. And so it was the start of this journey. And so little by little, to the point where now, you know, I embrace the fact that this is what you see is what you get. It helps with age as well. I mean, I'm 45 now. It's much easier to go, do you know what? This is me. If you don't like me, that's your loss. I am much more comfortable in my skin now than I was in my sort of mid-20s. And so a part of it is age, but a huge amount of that is down to Jesus and love and him transforming my understanding of how he wanted to be known by me. And then it took a slight little, an extra piece was added to it. So then end of 2019, although I prayed the prayer when I was 12, I'd been loved into heaven. I'd had this experience of like reading the Bible and sort of stuff leaping off the page at me. But I'd never really had like full on conversations with God. Like I'd talk to him, I'd pray and tell him my list of requirements. until 2019, there's a lady called Dr. Tony Robinson from Las Vegas, not to be muddled up with Tony Robbins, the guru, completely different person. She's a lady. She's female. She's a Christian. She's an amazing woman of God. I was on a week-long extravaganza, I forget what the right word is I'm looking for, with her being led by a lady called Christina Kimball. It was called the Yes God Challenge. And I asked God my very first question at the end of 2019. And she maintains that when, you know, you ask God a question, the first thing you hear will be God. The second thing you hear will be the enemy. Did God really say? And the third thing will be your own doubts and insecurities. This set me off on a journey into going, okay, God, like, what are you saying? It was like the next big, like, trajectory and like paradigm shift stuff, to the point where now everything I do, okay, God, what are we doing? What do you say about this? It's all Holy Spirit led. Whereas before, I was a Christian business owner. I wasn't led by Holy Spirit. Like, I didn't expect to have that kind of relationship with him. So we went from, you know, being for a long time, I'd tell, I'm here to help you be who you were created to be, because that was what changed my life, to yes, I'm here to help you be who you were created to be, but in relationship with God. And that extra bit was added as a result of that piece in 2019. And then it's been, you know, to where we are today now in 2023. It's, you know, been building that and doing more of that stuff. But that's the short version.
So you mentioned earlier, you mentioned UEIR. What does it mean and why is it so important?
So UEIR is April 2021, until April 2021, we should have said this at the outset. We're hoping that when people listen to this episode, there's a button for you to slow down the speaking if you're not used to hearing people talk fast. I'm the eldest of six children and I used to be a teacher. And so I do speak quite fast. I apologize in advance, but what you see is what you get. Anyway, April 2021, I was journaling with Holy Spirit, as had been my wont. I started doing that in April 2020. I had this, God said to me, ask me for an acronym for UEIR. And I was like, okay, can I have an acronym, please? Because until that point, I'd been saying that UEIR is about helping you be who you were created to be, which it partly is. But he said, right, UEIR is you plus IER. And I said, okay, what's IER? He said, IER is intentional, expectant, relationship. Just all of that stuff that I'd started unpacking from 2019 up till date. His argument was, if you focus on your relationship with me, hearing me, asking me questions, doing life with me, it will become so much easier to be who you were created to be. It won't happen by accident, but like, you know, all these different quizzes that we do online, if you do those quizzes and then go, okay, God, this quiz says that I should be in the, I don't know, Hufflepuff sort, house of Hogwarts. What do you say about that? What does that mean? What are you saying? If we do these quizzes and these tests in conjunction in relationship with God, it will change our understanding of what we're discovering about ourselves. And then the example I often give is if I woke up tomorrow and said, okay, God, I'm going to bake bread for every single person in my street. But then I checked in with Holy Spirit. Okay, Holy Spirit, what do you say? He would say, phone your mum, because my mum is great at making bread. Similarly, if she woke up tomorrow and said, okay, I'm going to build a website, what do you think, Holy Spirit? He's like, are you sure? Maybe you should phone Elle. My point being that if everything that we're doing, we do it like checking in with God and asking questions and, you know, engaging him in conversation, it becomes much harder to like sort of do stuff that's very counter to who we were created to be. I burn stuff all the time. I've burned pasta more than once. The idea of me making bread on my own is ridiculous. And God knows that. Why it's important is going back to like my story. I was borderline depressed, anxiety. Here in the UK, and I imagine it's probably the same in other places, other Western countries, we have challenges with our NHS because, you know, there's a 10-minute time slot. So if I had gone to my GP, you know, back, I don't know, sort of when my kids were little, they'd have probably put me on antidepressants or, you know, given me a pill to make me better. I didn't need a pill to make me better. I simply needed to be who I was created to be and stop putting so much pressure on myself. But there isn't the time within the constraints of our system to allow that sort of dialogue to happen. And so actually I would go so far to say is that actually if everybody could just be UEIR, be who they were created to be, we would alleviate a huge number of our mental health challenges. I'm not saying like, and I need people to hear what I'm saying. Don't hear what I'm not saying. I'm not anti-medication. Well, I'm against anti-blanket medication as like the solution for everything. I have people who I love who are on medication. You know, they need some of these chemicals to be topped up. That said, I think there's a lot of people walking around with either diagnoses from the doctor or that, you know, the Dr. Google, where we put in our symptoms, have given themselves these labels where actually, and labels that don't serve them, where actually if people just simply could, you know, be who they're created to be, recognize that we all make mistakes. I mean, I would maintain there's no such thing as normal anyway, like, but that's an aside. We'll probably get to that at some point later. But if we could be who we were created to be, we would alleviate a huge number of our mental health challenges, because it would mean that we'd be more loving to ourselves, but also more loving to other people as well. And isn't that ultimately what we're, you know, called to be, is to love others. So that's why I think it's important.
So I think so often, like, people don't exactly know, like, who they are as a person. So what happens in that case?
That's a very good question. I get that one quite a lot. I think, I mean, there are tools and things that can help you. I mean, I would maintain, start this journey in exploration with God. So if you focus on the relationship piece first, like, focus on actually expecting to hear God, asking him questions. Because if you love Jesus, you've got Holy Spirit living inside of you. If you don't yet know if you love Jesus, that's a whole other conversation. And you need that, get that bit sorted first. But we're going to work on the assumption that you love Jesus. You are told that, you know, you have Holy Spirit residing inside of you. God is living in you. So there is no moment in this day or in this week where you can't go anywhere and, you know, and get closer to God. He's already with you, speaking to you, whispering to you. And so actually when people, because I went around in circles for a long time, thing finding, actually, I alluded to Ephesians 2:10 earlier on. The blog post I'm writing is about that. It's about, you know, how do we find our purpose? I would maintain ultimately your purpose is to be you in relationship with God. And the specifics of what that looked like can play out from there. But there is practical stuff as well. So I recognize that, you know, I'd be going, oh, that's lovely, Elle, but give me some specifics. Notice, pay attention. There's two things you can pay attention to, and they're like polar opposites. So pay attention to those things that light you up, that energize you, that you could do all day without, you know, it really depleting you, or those things that you do and you're so engaged and enjoying them, you lose all sense of time. And then conversely, what are those things that deplete you, that you'd put on your stop doing list? What are those things you would love never have to do ever, ever again? Now, I recognize that as adults, and particularly adults, particularly as mums, I've got lots of things that I would put on my stop doing list that I do every single day. I would maintain, and sometimes, you know, there are certain things that we need to do that we have to just sort of suck up and do them, because that's what it means to be a grown up. You can do one of two things, however. You can find the fun in those things. We've changed our bathroom now because the shower leaked, but our old shower that leaked prior to it leaking, and we had this sort of like enclosed box shower. I used to hate cleaning this thing. It was a nightmare. So when I cleaned it, I would pretend I was Cinderella. And so I would, like, it's really ridiculous, but I found the fun in the chores that I didn't like doing. The other thing you can do with those things, and this doesn't directly answer your question, it's a side note, but we're going there anyway, because that's what we do. The other thing that you can do is, okay, I don't particularly like folding laundry. It's really quite tedious and boring. And so I either use that as a time to, like, okay, God, let's have a chit chat while we're doing that. Or sometimes I might put some music on, or even something on Netflix. But the other thing I like to do with those things that you don't like doing, I like to remind myself, why am I doing those things? I get to do the laundry because I have 5 people living in my house. I'm the one that wanted to fall in love, get married and have children. So if you can flip something from a got to do to a get to do, it can help. Even though it's just a semantics thing, it can make you feel a bit less bleh about it. And also maybe master the art of delegation. My husband, every now and again, quite frequently, will fold some laundry. He doesn't really do it exactly the way that I do it. It's not quite as neat. He doesn't turn the clothes around the right way, but he's really quick at it, and it means I don't have to do it. So I have a choice in that instance. I can either, you know, correct him and he'll never do it ever again. And then, oh, look, I've got to do all that laundry myself. Or I can live with the fact that he's folding a few creases into these clothes and just go, oh, wow, thanks so much. Then he does it a lot more. I choose to go for the second option. I recognize it's not everybody's choice. He does the same thing at Christmas time, incidentally, when he's wrapping Christmas presents. He's very organic in his wrapping. but I think we have to get a little bit uncomfortable maybe with things not being how we would necessarily have them be. Complete tangent, doesn't directly answer your question. Maybe somebody listening needs that bit. But those two pieces, noticing the stuff that lights you up and then conversely the stuff that drains you, can be a really good starting point. But I do think it's a journey. I didn't wake up one day and suddenly go, ta-da, I know who I am. And I still go off in tangents and go, oh, what about this thing? What about that thing? But when I have those sort of like random, like, ooh, okay, I'm like, okay, God, what do you say? So that's where the relationship piece then is really important, because it can draw us back into, okay, God, what are you doing right now in this season? Because it's seasonal as well. There's things I'm doing now that I wasn't doing 10 years ago. And there'll be things I'm doing in 10 years' time that I'm not doing now, because, you know, our seasons change, our interests change, the people around us change as well. You're not looking for the one magic answer to rule them all. You're looking for an answer for this season, I would suggest. And have fun with it. Because if you have fun with it, it becomes a lot less stressful, and then it becomes easier to approach it in a way that is life-giving and makes you smile.
You mentioned like laundry and looking at it a different way. And I've heard and have multiple friends that they'll pray over the person's laundry that they're folding.
Oh, that's cool.
And I'm like, I love that. I need to do that, but I don't do the laundry. So my husband does all the laundry. He does better at it than I do. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah, but there'll be other things. Like, when do you make your kids lunches? You could do it then, couldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Such a good idea.
So you mentioned kind of being like a little bit against normal earlier. What's your beef with being normal?
I mean, I used to say that normal is only a setting on the washing machine. And then a few months ago, my washing machine broke and we had a new washing machine, because we've already mentioned the fact we do lots of laundry in this house. Even my washing machine doesn't have a normal setting anymore now. It doesn't. I mean, it has the one that I use all the time, but it doesn't have a normal setting. So even that isn't true anymore. I don't think that there's any such thing as normal. I think that there is a system that's set up, and because of the constraints, I mean, like the education system, for example, like I used to be a teacher, the education system is set up to cope with a certain way of learning. I think we're getting better at it now. Like, we're recognizing the learning styles now are different. When I was a kid, there was one way, and it was, this is the way that you will do this thing. And if you don't get it, then you're stupid. Now we're recognizing that people learn in lots of different ways. So we are getting better at it. But the problem I've got with normal is it leads people feeling less than. Like, if you don't fit into what this path looks like, then there's something wrong with you. When actually there isn't anything wrong with you, your brain just works in a different way. Like, my brain is not neurotypical. And for the longest time, because of this whole like normal agenda, I thought that God was making up the difference, until at some point, I think it was last year even, or the year before, it must have been last year, he's like, no, Elle, I'm not making up the difference with your brain. I created your brain that way. And I was like, really? Are you sure? Like, I thought he was making up for mistakes. He said, no, there's no mistake about the way that your brain was created. I created you on purpose for a purpose. And the same is true for every single person on this planet, every single person who has ever been, whoever will be. God knew what he was doing when he made you. We're told in Ephesians, I forget the exact reference, but somewhere in Ephesians, you know, we are told that God knew us before he laid the foundations of the world. So, I mean, that just blows my mind completely. So like, before Genesis chapter 2, I guess somewhere between Genesis 1 verse 1 and Genesis 1 verse 2, that God knew you and saw you. He knew we'd be having this conversation in this moment. So don't tell me that the God who knew you way, way back in eternity past made a mistake. God doesn't make mistakes. And so this is my beef, to use your wonderful, beautiful American expression. I love it. My beef with normal is it leads people feeling that they are broken. Now, I'm not saying that we don't make mistakes and that we're not fallen creatures. I get that. But actually, Jesus said it is finished. It's done. Like, he has done everything for us. And so therefore, we do not need to be walking around living lives as broken people. You're sons and daughters of the King. Like, your dad spoke the stars into existence. We don't need to spend any more time reminding people just how terrible and awful they are. We know. I mean, if you could see inside my brain, I know the pickle I get into. I don't need anybody reminding me of that. What we need to do is remind people of just how God sees them. And he doesn't see you as normal. He sees you as this glorious, wonderful work of art. One of the translations of Ephesians 2:10, where we call it, I think in the NIV it's workmanship, but one of the translations describes it as work of art. So if you've ever made anything, whether it's, the example I often give is websites, because I don't do that at the moment, but I used to design websites. And so, you know, when you make something, you're like, oh, wow, look at that thing I made. It's so pretty. Whether it's a website, whether it's a book, whether it's a drawing, whether it's a poem, whether it's your child, you made that child. That sense of like, oh, look at that thing. Like, I made that thing. I'm not calling your children things, but you know what I mean? But that's how God sees you. You are his work of art, his precious creation. And so that's why normal does my head in, because it just leaves us feeling like that, you know, we're just, yeah, less than. I've already used that expression, I'm going to use it again, less than. That God doesn't see you as less than. And so that's why it really does my head in.
I love that. So I read on your website that you have a 3-word hack for turning any day around. Can you talk to me about this?
Absolutely. It's really fun. I love it. There's a lady called Morag who lives in Scotland. Isn't that a good Scottish name? For anybody, so if you don't know the geography of the UK, I'm going to give you a quick geography lesson. This is not related to 3-word hack. Scotland's the bit at the top. England's the bit in the middle that most Americans think is the whole of the UK, but it's not. Wales is the bit stuck on the side. And Ireland is the blob over there that's not connected to anything. And you've got Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland. And Southern Ireland is not part of the UK. Anyway, so Morag, bless her, she lives up in Scotland. And back in 2018, I had this wonderful conversation with her in a Facebook group about silver lining spotting and how, because it comes very naturally to me. And we talked about, maybe you could offer that as a service. And she asked this question that suddenly became something I talk about an awful lot. And I said, do you think you could teach people to be silver lining spotters? How do you do it? And thanks to that one magical question, and she doesn't know this, but she gets a name drop quite often because of, and I'll have to, one of these days I'll have to tell her. I'm going to make a note to myself after this one. Just when this episode goes live, I shall send her this episode. And Morag, this is not the first time you had a name drop, but you can. So basically, the 3 words, I'll tell you what they are first, and then I will give you an application for it. So the 3 words are very simple. The 3 words are, but, at, least. Now, the way that you use this, and I always give the caveat first, this is for those day-to-day irritations. I do not want you silver lining spotting the tragedies of life. There will be silver linings to be found in the really difficult stuff, but that takes time for healing. You know, when we're talking about like loss and all that sort of stuff, I give that caveat every single time because otherwise, you know, you've got to use your power with care. So with that caveat in place, in about 20 seconds time, if you're eating, you're going to want to pause the episode because I had a little dog called Charlie. He died in January 2021, bless him. However, he lives on through questions like this because I was recording a podcast episode with one of my friends. We were talking about silver lining spotting and I was about to give an example and he walked in and was sick on my carpet. So the way you use but at least, you acknowledge this thing that's just happened. Oh no, the dog's been sick on the carpet. You give voice to the thing that's annoying, whatever it might be. And then you pause. Then you use your 3 words, but at least. And this is where if you're eating, you want to pause the episode until you finish eating. Oh no, the dog's been sick on the carpet, but at least it was only foamy, frothy sick. It wasn't lumpy, chunky sick. This is genuinely what happened. And she kept it in the episode, bless her, with my friend when we were recording it. So I've been using this example ever since. Your mind loves to fill in the blanks. So by giving voice to the annoying thing that's happened, but at least, and then it's thanks. There's a group of neurons at the back of your brainstem called the reticular activating system. And it filters stuff in. It does loads of really cool stuff, which we may or may not get into. But it will give you examples. And so some of the examples will be ridiculous, you know, like my ridiculous dog example. But like, say you spill your coffee. Oh no, I've spilled my coffee, but at least I've got time to make another one. Or, but at least I didn't go on my feet and burn my toes. Or, you know, the world is your oyster with this one. It's amazing. And there'll be people listening who are like, oh, that's ridiculous. Elle, that would never work for me. I dare you to try it. I will give your money back guarantee because you didn't pay anything for this episode. Go and try it because the more that you do it, the easier it becomes. And then because of the reticular activating system, your mind filters in the things it thinks are important. And so the more that you practice being a silver lining spotter, as I call it, using that 3-word hack, the easier it becomes. And suddenly you'll be doing it to the point where, like I said to you already, use your power for good. There'll be occasions where something will happen to one of your friends and you'll be so tempted to give them the silver lining and they won't be quite ready for it yet. So make sure you wield your power with good, but it does become this thing that happens so, so easily the more you do it and the more you practice it. But at least.
I really like that. And I'm definitely going to put that into practice more. Do you really believe that every day can be fun and full of happiness and joy?
Absolutely. Yes. Not every single moment of every single day is full of happiness and joy and delight. And anybody who tells you that they're happy and full of joy and delight every single day is either lying or they're on something. But I do believe that there are delightful moments in every single day. Again, it comes back to the reticular activating system that sometimes there are people who tend to be what I call a little bit Eeyore, you know, the glass half empty, it becomes almost like this self-fulfilling prophecy because of the way that we're wired, the way that God created us. And I don't mean that God created you to be Eeyore. I mean that God created you that your mind works in amazing ways. So if you get in the habit of like, and some people have to set timers for this until they do it like automatically. If you get in the habit of pausing, looking around you, okay, what's lovely in this moment? Your mind will filter in those things that are lovely. My car, in fact, it's not my car now. My car now is now red, but my previous car before I pranged it, pranged is British slang for bumped it. However, I had this beautiful yellow car that, I mean, your listeners can't see it, but the same color as my wall that you can see, Jordan. It was brilliant. And the really fascinating thing was, once I bought a yellow car, I started seeing yellow cars around town all of the time. Now, had my local town suddenly had loads of extra people driving yellow cars? No. My mind had filtered in these yellow cars because it thought they were important to me. Same thing when you find out that you're pregnant or someone you care about is pregnant. You will start seeing babies. Or when my daughter was learning to drive, there were suddenly learner drivers everywhere. It was quite annoying, actually, because, you know, learner drivers, we want to get places. This is all thanks to the reticular activating system acting like a filter. A real world example of this that people in 2023 will be familiar with is the Facebook and Instagram algorithm. Those things that you like, click on, comment on, Facebook will serve you up more of the same. Facebook is copying, or Meta as we call them now, Facebook is copying your brain. That's what your brain does and has been doing since before you were born. God created you that way. So that's why every single day can have delightful moments in it. It's just sometimes it takes a little bit of practice. If I could have a clone, I would go and do brain science because I find it fascinating. Because there's this whole area of brain science called neuroplasticity, which I will probably slaughter and don't know enough about to be really knowledgeable about. I wish I did. But it's to do with the neural pathways in your brain. For a long time, we thought that they were fixed. So if you were somebody who was negative, that's just your lot. That's not true. It's growth mindset versus fixed mindset. Your mind can change and grow and alter those pathways depending upon what you choose to notice and pay attention to. And so you really will literally change your brain, those neural pathways in your brain, by doing things like silver lining spotting. It's the reason why we tell people, oh, write down three things you're thankful for. It sounds a bit like a twee little, oh yeah, throwaway thing. It's not actually. Positive psychology has proven that if you get somebody who's depressed to do that every single day for 30 days, they will start to feel better. I'm not saying it's magic. It's not magic. It's the way that God created your mind to work. And you have to make the effort to look for those things. But the more that you do it, much like the silver lining spotting, the more that you do it, the easier it becomes. Like someone says to me, how are you today? Brilliant. Like life is fantastic. That's not to say that like I'm burying my head in the sand or I don't have like random things happen that are annoying. Of course I do. But my default level is life is great. And then there'll be things that happen that aren't great along the way and we deal with them. But if you can raise your default level, it does make day-to-day life a lot more lovely. And I maintain that's what you were created for. I mean, you were created to be you, but God didn't create you with a baseline life of like that sucks. You know, he created you to thrive. And all of this stuff with the brain science is part of how you were created. So why not use it to your best ability, God helping you.
Another thing that I read about on your page was radical encounters with God's love. So why are you so passionate about this?
We've sort of touched upon this a little bit already. I think it's for me, it's because the difference in me as a person, in my scared out of hell versus my loved into heaven sort of life, if you like. I grew up in a Christian home. My parents are both born again Christians. And so I knew all of the words. I knew all of the church stuff. But it wasn't until I had that encounter with God's love that actually it made a difference. I mean, if I'd have died in between praying the prayer when I was 12 and being loved into heaven, would I have been in heaven? Absolutely. But I don't believe salvation is about a get out of hell free card. It's meant to be about relationship and actually bringing heaven to earth right now. I think it's Spurgeon that said, a little bit of faith will get you to heaven, but a great big dose of faith will bring heaven to earth. And probably slightly slaughtering that. He may not have used the word dose. But it's those encounters with God's love that will allow us to be happy, delightful human beings, thriving Christians that will point other people to God's love. So if anybody has this, I mean, everybody who loves Jesus should have an evangelical urging about them. But if anybody is feeling like, oh, I want more people to come to know Jesus, well, actually focus on your relationship with God. because you can't share with other people the love that God has for them if you don't live from that place of love yourself. Like I often talk about loving from the saucer. It's on my shelf now. So there's a saucer over there, which I'm not going to go, you know, like a traditional cup and saucer. Contrary to what you might think, we don't all drink out of cups and saucers in the UK. I'm just saying, I have a cup and saucer on my shelf because my granddad, he's now passed away, but he was born in June and I was born in June. And I was always told that when I turned 18, that my grandparents would give me a cup and saucer with my birth flower on, which is a rose. They didn't, but he had one. I inherited it when he passed away. That's the only reason I have a cup and saucer. However, cup and saucer, if I put tea, let's say, because you all think we drink tea. I actually quite like coffee, but that's inside. we're dispelling all of the myths today, aren't we? If I put some tea into my teacup and I spill it from my teapot, of course, because of course I'm going to use a teapot. I couldn't possibly just dunk it with a bag, you know. So if I'm filling my cup, bone china, of course, if I'm filling my cup with my teapot and I keep going and going and going and going and going and then I don't stop, what happens? It spills over the edge into the saucer. We want you loving from the saucer, being so full of God's love that you're loving people from the overflow, not loving so that you're feeling depleted. And so that's why I'm passionate about it. There's a side note to this as well. And then part of the thing that happened to me during lockdown is I did, and this is related, I'm not sure how much this we're going to get into, but I did a theology course, like digging into loads of really cool stuff. But there was a module on church history in the second semester, which I thought would be really tedious. I'm like, oh, church, yawn. It was fascinating because it dug into like how we got to where we are today. How does God want to be known by us? And this idea, this Western picture of God as being like untouchable and big and mighty and powerful versus actually the Hebrew picture of God. If you look in, I think it's Genesis 17, where God says to Abraham, I'm El Shaddai. And from El Shaddai, it means all powerful. But Hebrew is a relational language. And there is a point I'm getting to, I promise.
You're fine.
Hebrew is a relational language. It's not an accident that the Old Testament is written in Hebrew. So when God introduces himself to Abraham as El Shaddai, he's not saying, I'm all powerful, you should be scared of me. He's saying, I'm more powerful in my love for you. I'm more powerful in the way I will provide for you. I'm more powerful in the fact I'm never, ever giving up on you. And yet in our Western tradition, we have words like omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent. I don't know if anybody grew up in church, they would have grown up with three omnis. Now, am I saying that God's not all powerful and mighty? No, of course I'm not. He spoke the stars into existence. But that's not how he wants to be known by you. He wants to be known by the fact that he is closer than the air that you breathe. He is showing up for you and he's loving and there for you all the time. And so when I did that course, it was just another one of those moments, because the reason we've got this picture of God as being mighty and powerful and aloof is because of ancient Greek philosophy. This is too much for now, really, but go and dig into people like Plotinus and St. Augustine. We call him St. Augustine. He was quite well known in the church and like years and years and years ago. St. Augustine, or Augustine, as I like to call him, I don't think he's a saint at all because he had too much of a platform and led us into a bit of a pickle today. But Augustine, prior to becoming a Christian, he was a student of ancient Greek philosophy like Plato and Plotinus, where the understanding of God from that picture was a faraway, aloof God. So when Augustine became a Christian and he read things like, oh, Abraham talked to God and God changed his mind, that addled his brain because it didn't fit with his Greek classic picture of God. Classical Greek tells you that God's never changing. He never changes his mind. He's untouchable. What do I do with this? This dude came along, I forget his name, and said, don't worry about it. He said, that didn't really happen. It's just a figure of speech. It's not just a figure of speech. God did change his mind in that instant. He had a conversation with Abraham. But that's how he dealt with it. And as a result of that, all of these years later, so St. Augustine became really influential in the church with his mix of ancient Greek philosophy and his mix of so much of what we now believe in our Western theology isn't actually how God ever wanted to be known by us. It was adopted because of people like Augustine. Like I say, bit of a tangent. There's much more to this really than actually we can go into today. What I would encourage people to do is actually, if your picture of God is not love, then you need to go and have a look and have a, what's going on here, because God is love. You know, yes, he's holy and mighty, but he is love. And all of those other characteristics that we see of him are filtered through that love. An example I was given one time is like, I love my kids as you love your kids. when they were little, if I was walking along the road with them and then they sort of ran off ahead into the street, I'd say, I'm not going to shout because I've wrecked the microphone levels and your editor would kill us. But I would, can you imagine, bless him, but I would say, hey, no. And in that moment, I would sound angry and cross, but I would be fierce because I'd be fierce in my love and wanting to protect them. So yes, we do see pictures of where God does look really quite fierce in the Bible, but actually he is fierce and in his love. And so people who tell me, oh, I don't believe in God, I'm like, well, tell me what God you don't believe in, because I probably don't believe in him either. It's so important we dig into actually, God, how do you want to be known by me? Being more important than I really can find the words for in this moment, because that shifted something in my whole understanding, my whole paradigm of who God is and how he wants to be known. So that's why I think those love encounters are so important, because without love, it's just religion. And religion was never God's first choice. Relationship was God's first choice, even with the Israelites. Again, side tangent, but he invited them into relationship first. He said, go and prepare yourselves. Again, I'm paraphrasing. This is Exodus and Numbers. Go and prepare yourself because I want to meet with you. I want to have a conversation with you. And they went, no, 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 we're scared. Moses, you tell us what to do. And in that moment, religion was born. But religion was never God's first choice. It was always about relationship. And God, in his mercy and his grace, met them where they were at, said, okay, if you want a religion, here's how we're going to do it. And from that moment on, you know, put all of the stuff in place to get us to today, where actually we've got Jesus and we don't have to follow all those rules and regulations because they were always too hard to follow anyway. So that's why love's important.
I love that you said, like, who is this God that you believe in? Because I probably don't believe in him anyway. Like, I think that's the epiphany of people not believing in God. You know what I mean? Like, they have this like skewed version of what God is, that he's all angry, all suffering, all bad all the time. And that's not God at all. And so no. I love that you said that. So we're kind of wrapping up our time here. Do you have any books, resources, even Instagram accounts, maybe podcasts that have been helpful to you dialing in on this topic?
Oh, that's a good question. Loads, so many. Okay. One book I would encourage you to read, which you will need to read more than once, and it will wreck your brain initially. There's a book by Bradley Jersak. He's Canadian. I might be slaughtering his surname. It's called A More Christ-Like Word. That digs into the Bible, as you'd expect, the Word. Actually, the Word is Jesus. The scriptures never call themselves the Word. So that's really fascinating. If you want someone to follow, go and check out Toni Robinson. She's on Facebook. I think it's something like Well-Watered Woman. But Dr. Toni Robinson, because she releases little sound bites of pieces that she's getting from God, which will make you think, God did a number on me, because I've been on this whole journey with stuff. And then there's a guy called Dub Alexander who does School of Kingdom. I haven't actually been through School of Kingdom. One of my friends has. And the stuff they've been unpacking on School of Kingdom, I'm like, oh my goodness, there's this. It's this journey that I've been on. It's actually digging into all of this stuff we've sort of touched upon. So Dub Alexander, School of Kingdom is worth checking out. If you like to learn, I would invite you, go and do the School of Theology and Supernatural Living from Encounter Church. They're in Las Vegas. They've now got an extra church somewhere on the outskirts of New York. What I will do is I will contact, because Dr. Tony's connected to them. I think it was like $100 to do this course, but it was the best $100 I ever spent. I will go and check out from Dr. Toni, is that course still available? If it is, I'll let you know and you can pop it in the show notes, because that really encourages you to dig in. Why do I believe the things I believe? Which I think is so important, particularly for those of us who perhaps grew up, you know, learning under our parents. And our parents have got a really good opportunity. But at some point, as children and young people, we have to go, okay, well, you want it to move from your parents' belief to something that's your own, don't you? So that was really, I'm getting nudged to mention the UEA book as well, which you can get for free via my website, because that'll help you dig into the relationship and give some whole load of practical stuff. You can buy it on Amazon for a fiver, but it's available for free, I think, via uea.com/love notes. You'll get the little love notes, but you'll also get the UEA book. We don't like to publicize ourselves, which is why I'm saying this with some reticence in my voice. However, that's particularly useful for somebody if you don't know if you can hear from God. You need that one first. I mean, there's loads of books. How can I hear from God? The reason why I like mine is I'm told it's short and sweet and actionable. It's really little and very practical. And I don't want you reading 300 pages of how to hear from God and never actually putting any of it into practice. Whereas the UEA book is short and very actionable. So if somebody doesn't know if they can hear from God, you definitely want to start there, because, spoiler alert, you can. And if you don't know if you can hear from God, or no, if you don't yet know if you know Jesus, download a free sample, because at the opening of that book, there's a whole thing that introduces you to Jesus. I'm just saying, because it felt like too good an opportunity to miss. So yeah, what I'll do, John, is I'll send you links to people like Dr. Tony, so you can make it easier for people. They can to find them in the show notes.
Perfect.
Because I know that's a whole load of like dumping lots of people at you.
Is there anything, is there anything that we haven't covered that you want to say before we close out?
We talked so much, we didn't get to your quick fire round.
Oh, we're getting there.
Oh, there you go.
Here we go. All right. So, yep.
I was thinking, oh, goodness, I've been so wordy. Bless her. She didn't get a quick fire.
Nope. All right. Let's get started on our rapid fire questions. What is your go-to coffee order?
I'm very boring. I just have a flat white. Do you know what? Do you have flat whites in the US? It's like a latte, but with less milk.
Yeah.
Okay. So a flat white. But if I'm in America, I'd order a latte.
Perfect. Anything special or just plain latte?
Just as it is. I try to avoid too much sugar. And if you add in all the extra bits and stuff. So if I'm in the cinema or the movies, as you'd call it, I'd ask for extra hot. Because otherwise I tend to drink it too quickly. I'm drinking it and the trailers are still going. But yeah, I just like it as it is. I was vegan for a long time and veggie now. So when I was vegan, I used to have it with oat milk, which is very nice. But now I just have it with regular milk.
What is the last thing you watched on TV?
There's a TV series at the moment called Lost here in the UK. It's not Lost. There's a TV series years ago. This is one. It's a Channel 4 thing. I don't know if they make it across the pond. They took 11 strangers and they dumped them on this remote area of Canada, like a mile away from each other, and they basically got to survive in isolation for as long as possible. So we were catching up on, my husband and I were catching up on the episode last night. We're down to just the last four people. Oh, it's quite full on. This poor girl, she was vegetarian and then she killed a squirrel and ate it. So
it's kind of like survival in a way.
Yeah. Oh, actually, now I'm saying that, it's not, is it called Lost or is it called Alive? There's a US version.
Okay.
Now I'm saying that. There's a US version. There was 10 seasons of it. And we've just done the first UK one.
Okay.
I told you the wrong name. It's called Alone. It's not called Lost. It's not called Alive. It's called Alone.
Okay.
Have you heard of Alone?
No.
Okay. Well, it's called Alone. They have done a US version. They've done like, I think, a huge number of seasons of it.
Interesting. I'll have to check it out. If someone wrote a book about your life, what would the title be?
Bonkers.
I love it. If our guests want to follow you, where could they find you?
Probably go to yuia.com, or you can equally go to heavenandl.com, because that's recently I moved the blog over to there and I share the love notes and stuff on there. I do have a Facebook page and an Instagram profile, but I'm not really posting on there at the moment. So if you're on Substack, go to heavenandl.com. It will redirect you to my Substack page. I do from time to time release notes on there as well when I remember, but there's podcasts and stuff, but it's all kind of, you can find it all from there.
Awesome. Well, we've loved having you. Thank you so much for joining us on With a Splash of Jesus.
Thank you for having me. I've had a wonderful time.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of With a Splash of Jesus. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to support the podcast further, please subscribe, share with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you have a story you want to share, please reach out to us on Instagram. We hope you're encouraged and challenged by this ministry. We here at With a Splash of Jesus are praying that you can take action today and make a splash wherever you are at.